Welcome back. This is the Gastroenteritis Blues. I'm Steve Lippman with Dan Volpone and Emily Anderson. Hi, guys. How are you, Emily?
I'm good. Hanging out with Luna.
Great.
Yeah. I'm good and excited for this episode.
Yes. Dan, Lashana Tova. It's all very good.
Happy New Year.
That was Portuguese.
I don't know what the stuff is in like the things they say. I don't know any of them.
No, neither do I.
But it's Jewish New Year. And people say stuff, and I don't know the language. I thought that's what you were doing.
No, but I know the one thing you say. But that's
I don't know that. I don't even know that.
Now I'm out. I think that means Happy New Year in we should stop. The guest today, we have a very special guest coming on today. Marshall Harris, who I'm sure many of you know. He was an anchor and host at NBC Sports Philly for more than 11 years from 2008 to 2019, and currently he's the sports director of CBS Sacramento. So he's going to be joining us in like 15 minutes. I can't wait to talk to him. That'll be very cool. We'll get a few things out of the way while we wait for Marshall. Sorry. First and biggest order of news is that this week Keith Pompey, friend of the podcast, put out a report that Mike D'Antoni is like the front runner all of a sudden for the job to be the Sixers coach, and that it's his job to lose, and that he would be interviewing very shortly. I'm not sure who is interviewing him, but what do you guys think about the news that all of a sudden D'Antoni might be sort of on the goal line here? What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy to have him back, I guess, because he was here before. I know some people were concerned about fit because we have a big team and he's traditionally run small ball lineups, but like if we come back with the same team, we're screwed anyway. So
yeah,
hopefully
yeah,
at least
exactly.
Like thinking he's going to be the guy, at least like maybe as a signal, like they recognize that we have to bring in guards to play basketball.
Emily, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, he's like the biggest name in the bunch. So I guess that's kind of fun. Like, hey, we can get a big name coach. But I think I've said this before a million times, like, I don't know if I can pick a coach until I know a roster, and I can't pick a roster until we have a front office. And it's just like a never ending cycle of we're not making decisions in the right order. But I think he's an innovative coach. Maybe he can figure something out. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. The thing I don't like about it is that we have like rumors about the Sixers front office stuff, and we can transition to that. There's a rumor that that Neil Olshey of Portland is interested in the job if he were to have full power as the president of basketball operations, and the Sixers are exploring that opportunity to bring in a president of basketball ops. Like that, I don't know if they know PEMDAS, but like that should happen first before the coach stuff. Some people are worried about D'Antoni as it relates to Embiid, that like, if the Sixers hired D'Antoni would mean that Embiid's out. I kind of like don't buy that. I think that he's probably a smart enough guy and can recognize that like, you know, Embiid's the best player on the team and there must be a way to blend what he's done before. You know, like I think that he can probably adapt. So what do you think of the front office stuff? And, you know, it said that they might be interested in like Daryl Morey, who they just said in Houston would not be leaving, and Kevin Pritchard from Indiana. I guess I'm happy to see that they're exploring the opportunity to bring in a president, but I won't believe it as anything but like lip service until it actually happens. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. I have a hard time seeing Elton Brand hiring someone above him when it's his choice and it seems he doesn't have to. Like, why would you? No one does that. No one's like, unless they're told to go like hire a boss, no one's like, let's just bring in someone and tell them what to do. Like you think you want to put someone under him, but I would be happy if they put someone above him because I like we've talked about all the time. I don't understand how he's suddenly gotten more power.
Right.
So hopefully he doesn't.
Yeah. Emily, what do you think about the front office stuff?
Yeah, agree with Dan. Like, I don't know anyone who's been like, you can work for yourself or you can have a boss. Like, which one do you want? Like, I'll take a boss. I would like to answer to someone, actually.
The only thing is maybe Josh Harris is so insufferable that he wants, like, an extra degree of separation.
Like a buffer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
That could be it.
The Olshi stuff, from what I read, I think that's just, like, Philly, someone from the office, like, trying to make people think that someone wants this job. I don't think anyone wants this job, because from what I read from out there, like, he's under contract, he's happy working where he is, and he doesn't make comments to the media. So, like, it's all just, like, stuff that Philly's putting out, and I think they're just trying to make it seem like it's a desirable location and it's not a dumpster fire when it is, in fact, a dumpster fire.
Or to just make it seem like, well, we tried. Look at all these big-name people, which they did last time.
Yeah.
Like Bob Myers and ridiculous stuff. But, like, they're not getting anybody worth anything if they can't hire their own people. And,
yeah,
like, you know, it just wouldn't make any sense. And then I think you bring up a good point about Elton Brand probably not bringing in a guy he has to answer to. It's like, we're not going to hire fucking Joe Rogan for this podcast. No, thank you. I think it's a
good only analogy. Because we don't like having a boss.
Yeah, that's the only reason. We've had the opportunity. He's interested. Joseph. no, he's not. Sixers, there was a report. I don't know how legit it is, but we'll take what we can get, that the Sixers are interested in bringing back Drew Holiday. I love Drew. I've always loved Drew, and he's sort of awesome. So I would love that. What do you guys think about the potential? You know, the report said that the Pelicans were also interested in a trade with the Sixers surrounding Drew. I don't really know what that would mean or what the right price would be, but what do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I love Drew Holiday, and I think we talked about him last week a little bit, but this was before this report. And I know you mentioned, like, you know, he's an on-ball, off-ball guy, would be a good fit with Ben. He was one of my favorite players when he was here, and I think he was really even underappreciated that one All-Star year. He was really good that year, but the Sixers were kind of meh.
Right.
But yeah, a good defender, can do a lot. He's just an all-around player. I still would love to have Chris Paul. I don't care about the age. I don't care about the contract. I want the best player possible, but it seems likely that Drew Holiday might be the best player they can actually legitimately get. So I would be thrilled. I mean, I wouldn't even have to talk myself into it. I'm already into it.
Emily, what do you think?
Yeah, I was frozen for a lot of what Dan said. So I don't know if I agree or disagree, but I'm also
tell you right now, you didn't miss much.
I'm also into the idea. Not sure if I'm repeating anything that he said. I know I read some Bleacher Report article or something where the potential trade was like Richardson, Horford, the 2021 first and a 2022 pick for Drew and JJ. I'm into that idea. Give Joe a friend back. I don't have to give up. I don't have to give up Matisse, and that makes me happy. So I would do that trade in a heartbeat.
If you can get Drew and JJ, and JJ is certainly lame, but and he left a woman in the back of a trunk in sort of a strange move. He's very good at what he's very good at, and Embiid clearly adores him. So if they could bring him back, and the way that the two of them would run their two-man game in the half-court offense, like personally, and you guys can tell me what you think, but if it's a trade for Drew and JJ, like, I would give up Matisse with Richardson and Horford if that's what it takes to make it happen. I think that would be like pretty drastically change the team and the way I feel about them. Even though those are two guys on the wrong side of 30 and it's not ideal in terms of like timelines, but I feel like the timeline is now for everyone in that trade. So it would suck to give away Matisse, but this is sort of the position they're in right now. So Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really against giving up Matisse. Like, I know everyone loves him, and like sentimentally we want him around, and he does certain things really well on the defensive side of the ball, but like he's not filling a particular weakness. Like when Ben is here, and especially in that trade, we're bringing back other perimeter defenders. Like,
yeah,
go get some. I cannot watch a similar offensive season as I just watched. So I like if you have to give him up for the team to be able to score points, then I mean, go for it. I don't think he's anything like, he was a good find where they got him. He was a nice pick, but he's not like, oh my God, like how did they get him where they got him? He should have been a top 10 player. He's not that. He's a solid player. And I think he'll obviously have a lengthy career.
The thing about Matisse is not that he's like top 10 guy. Like, how did they possibly get him? It's just that, again, this fucking team is going to have like a good rookie who may be better than he is right now and have to trade him because like, this is just what they do, you know? So it's really the principle of it all where it's like, he just did the first year of his rookie contract and we probably have to trade him. Would you rather, if I think I probably know your answer to this now, but would you guys rather, if it was in a package like this and it was one or the other, would you rather give up Matisse or Shake?
Shake.
Yeah.
I don't think Shake does anything like that unique. And I think a lot of the reason, you know, everyone was so into Shake is that he's like the only player that was any kind of sensible fit on this team. But he's not like any kind of great player. He's a really good shooter and he's okay at some other stuff. But Matisse like can have a role on a championship team for sure. And Shake is like iffy, I feel like.
Emily, you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that, I think. And also, I feel like Matisse's defensive instincts and defensive IQ is just something that's really hard to teach, where he can work on a shot, he can work on, you know, some of the other stuff that Shake does well. But I think that defense is kind of like an innate thing that's really hard to teach. So I feel like it's a more valuable asset.
Yeah, I mean, Shake was just on this Sixers team. So watching him, like, dribble the ball and not double dribble and shoot it when he was open, it was like watching like the toilet flush the other way in Australia. It was like very jarring. So I guess you can tend to have a skewed perspective of Shake, but I'm sure league-wide, Matisse is the one with the higher reputation. Oh, one thing that wasn't on the rundown, Ben Simmons made the first team all defense and he made third team all NBA. Embiid made neither. I love Embiid more than anyone, but I sort of like it that he was left off these teams because he wasn't great this year. And like, he just tweeted about how like he feels like he's been deported and they'll see next year. That kind of attitude would be wonderful. I would love like a, I'll show you off season and subsequent season from Embiid. So I'm happy to see him sort of humbled by being left off these teams because he did sleepwalk through a lot. I mean, he's better than Gobert overall. He probably should have been third team all NBA, but I'm happy to see it. Emily, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. But I feel like Joe does this stuff like every year, like just you wait and see. And then I don't see. So you guys know, I love Joe. This is a no Joe slander podcast, but I would really like for him to like make good on these tweet promises of like just you watch, because I want to watch, like, so please show me.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he's been in the league a few years now and there's things that he has clearly been bad at and is still clearly bad at, like, especially, I mean, he's gotten better passing from the double, but sometimes he tries to dribble through stuff he really can't and he falls down and he does it all the time and he always has. And but even if he's not going to, like, make improvements and, like, fully patch the biggest issues that he has, I at least want him to play angry. Because,
right,
like, he was so passive. Like you said, he was sleepwalking through the year. Like, give me some energy. Like, some really, like, some we need players who wanted to win. I feel like we lost that with JJ and Jimmy, too.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, hopefully it is sort of an FU season from Embiid. And just as we get there, I'm so happy to bring in, first of all, I'm Marshall Harris is here on the podcast. My name is Steve, that's Dan, and that's Emily. You can guess which is which. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys doing today?
We're great. Good. So, I mean, I'd just love to know how you're doing in California now. We certainly miss you around Philly. So tell me how you've been doing and how the quarantine's been going. It's a wild time. How you doing?
It is definitely a wild time. I'm doing much better now than I was at the beginning of the week. We have wildfires out here on top of the pandemic. It's been kind of crazy, but we've had really good weather the last 3 days, so I've been able to get outside I've been telling people inside has been closed because of COVID-19, but outside has been closed because of these wildfires. So what are you supposed to do?
You can't be anywhere.
It's been tough. I was actually back in on the East Coast a couple of weeks ago for a surprise birthday for my friend down in Cape May, New Jersey. And when I left here, the wildfires were going on and Cape May was beautiful and great. And then I got back to California. I was like, oh yeah, these wildfires are, that's a problem. And this is my second summer here. But last year we didn't really have any issues with the wildfires where I live. But there's days where you didn't see the sun. It's crazy. It smells like smoke. Can't be outside. All these really bad. They almost canceled the Niners game. Some of that smoke affected a Seattle Mariners game. They had to move the series from Seattle to San Francisco. It's been crazy. But I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. Sports are back for now. So that's been great. NBA's been interesting. I'm sure you guys are, I don't know how you guys feel about, I don't know. I've been trying to get a gauge on how the city of Philadelphia feels about the success of Jimmy Butler post the Sixers.
Oh, is he doing well? I haven't noticed. I hope he's doing well.
He's on that, just to tie it back into Philadelphia, he's on that like 2-1 Lakers, maybe we'll only lose a game trek right now, which, you know, it's tough to watch, I'm sure, as a Sixers fan. And it's Jimmy Butler is that dude, man. I mean, you know, I'm looking at it before he came to Philadelphia and I was like, he was on a not great Bulls team, took them to the playoffs. He was on a Minnesota Timberwolves team in the Western Conference, took them to the playoffs. And, you know, a great friend of mine, Crystal Rich, who's a co-host for Sixers Outsiders. I remember when she said it, like the day she said it, that Jimmy Butler wasn't going to the playoffs with Miami Heat. I was like, are you sure? Are you sure? And of course they make the playoffs and are on a kind of a, just a whirlwind tour. But no, sports has been great. It's been great to be back. I was in quarantine, like working from home status for about 3.5 months. That was not great. During that time, I also got hit by a car.
But are you okay?
But I'm okay. I'm good. I just, like, I thought a car ran over my toe, my big toe. I thought I, like, had a broken toe. It was just, like, a big laceration.
Jeez.
Wow.
I was sidelined for a few days with neck, a few weeks, actually, with neck, back issues. But I'm good now. We out here. I go for a run now?
How are you liking the new position?
What'd you say?
How are you liking the new position?
It's great. So for people who don't know, I was at NBC Sports Philadelphia for a decade, doing mainly Sixers and Phillies pre and post game shows. And as you guys know, there have been a lot of changes at NBC Sports Philadelphia. Me leaving wasn't like a big surprise to me or most of the people who I worked with. And I just needed a break. I've been working full-time since I was a junior in college. My first job, I was a weekend sports anchor at a little station called WCBI, the CBS affiliate in Columbus, Mississippi. I went to Mississippi State, and it was like 20 minutes from campus. And I worked full-time while I was still in school, and I really haven't had a break since then. I went from there to my hometown, Huntsville, Alabama, for 2 years, to Cincinnati for 2 years, worked in Pittsburgh doing sideline reporting, pre- and post-game hosting for the Penguins and the Pirates, covering the Steelers. And at the end of that time in Philadelphia, I was just like, yo, I just need to chill. Cause like, I was talking to people about doing some work, but I was doing part-time radio work at WIP, which kind of left me able to do stuff. And that was enough for me. That was really enough. I did some crazy stuff. I went and consulted on a news magazine show that they were starting in Aruba for English speaking tourists. So it was like, you want to pay me to come to Aruba for to just consult? I'm with that. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the sport round net, which is also a spike ball.
Oh yeah.
A lot. So they decided they were going to put spike ball on television, you know, in that true essence of ESPN, the Ocho. A guy I had worked with at NBC Sports Philadelphia was like, hey, we have this thing that we're going to put on TV. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Spikeball. But they were asking if we knew anybody who might be interested in doing like a play-by-play for it. And I was like, Marshall would probably like to do something like this. And I was like, wait, what is Spikeball? So I go on like this deep dive on YouTube and I watch like probably close to 100 hours of spike ball, just random videos. And I learn about it. And we put spike ball on TV in Lancaster for a thing. And then we did the whole, 4th of July with like the hot dog eating contest and all that. Did it from Coney Island. We did a thing. And then last year I did the national championships at the University of Georgia, which was so much fun. I was actually supposed to do one like in San Francisco right before the pandemic came and shut everything down. So I was just doing like different stuff. And then this station in Sacramento, my agent calls me. He's like, yeah, this guy from Sacramento. And stuff. He's like, Sacramento? I've never even been to Sacramento. Isn't that like the state capital? I know what Sacramento is. And basically in a time, I don't know how much you guys are familiar with like how TV stations work, local TV stations, but most of them are cutting back like their sports coverage. Philadelphia is an exception. Like you can't do news without sports in Philadelphia. You just, it's not a good look. But they were like, we want to build up our sports department because they didn't have a sports department for over a decade. And they're like, we think you would be a good person to come and lead this change. So I came out here, visited. I was like, oh yeah, I could live here. It's sunny all the time. This is before I knew about wildfire season. It doesn't snow. And we built a bunch of stuff up. Like tomorrow I'm going to work 15 hours. We have a show that comes out of the NFL on CBS. You know how like if you're watching the NFL and they'll be like, up next, 60 minutes, except on the West Coast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we have a sports show that we put on in that time slot leading up to like our local news. And then we do a Sunday night sports show at 11:30, but it's really fun. I've been able to be creative, get guests, do all that stuff. So it's been really cool. I've done what they asked me to come out here and do. It's been cool.
Congratulations on the new job.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thank you. It was really the challenge of also managing people, like to be in charge and given full autonomy for a department. I was like, that's something that interests me because I want to see if I want to do management type stuff. I mean, being on TV and being on the radio and having a voice is one thing, but management's different. It's just different, different challenges. I'll leave it at that.
It makes sense to me. You said like you needed a break. Like I always look at you and you and Michael Barkham were the two guys. I was like, these guys never stop working. Like these are two hardworking guys. They're always on TV.
Yeah. I mean, that's the nature of the business though. Cause like, especially if you do baseball, they play baseball every day.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like the idea that you do like every game, but like, that's the model that they have now at NBC Sports Philadelphia and all the NBC Sports regionals is like, we're going to give you a sport. That's going to be your sport. And you're going to work every day that sport's on the air. And baseball, a lot of people wouldn't be up for that challenge, but I would gladly do baseball every day. I had no issue with that. Give me the same days off that the players and the coaches get, obviously. And then I'm good with that. Cause I love it's a labor of love. It's work, but it's also something you love. I love baseball. Baseball was my first love when it comes to sports. Just the idea that every day is a new adventure. Like football, you got to wait a whole week for the next game. Like there's a new game every day, which is hazardous maybe to some people's health if you're a Philly fan.
Yeah.
If you're Ricky Pitalico in particular, like that bullpen, man. Whew! So
not great.
It's been crazy. Yeah, it's not great, Bob. Not great, as they say.
Well, so like speaking of your time in Philly, one thing that comes to mind, like I don't know why this sticks in my head, but I think about like when the Eagles won the Super Bowl and the video of you on the street is always in my head. But like, what was your favorite? Like just on camera memory from your time here.
Whew, on camera, that's a lot of memories. I think when the Phillies won the World Series was great because they sent me out. They're like, we need to get like a vantage point from the street. So I literally went out to Broad Street and everybody was pouring out on the Broad Street. This man was so happy that I interviewed him. He's like, it's so great, Marshall. He gives me this giant kiss on the cheek. And like just runs off into the night. It was like crazy and disturbing and everything else all at the same time. But it was like genuine, pure joy. And then that was the first year I worked at NBC Sports Philadelphia. And then the last major thing I covered was like the city's reaction to the Super Bowl. And people were like, what was it like covering like, you know, City Hall, Center City, when the Eagles won the Super Bowl? I was like, you ever see or read about this character? It's a fictional character called Spider-Man. Well, being out there, it was like radioactive spiders bit every single person that was out on the because they all believed they had the ability to climb everything.
Yeah.
Like, and they didn't know how to adjust to the new abilities, much like Miles Morales in Into the Spider-Verse. It was very much like, we don't even know what to do now. We're just so excited because this is never supposed to happen in our lifetime. That's the easiest way to describe like those. So like bookending those two moments, and there were so many things in between. Like I got to cover the 2012 Olympics in London, and it was like, I was like, okay, now that I've done this, I can say like I've done the highest pinnacle of sport really on the planet. It's the Olympics. And I think part of me is like always thought maybe I should go into news instead of sports. And I know I could go into news and knowing that I did everything. I mean, I've covered everything from World Series to NFL to Final Fours. Like there's nothing like I'm just like I didn't get to do, if that makes any sense. Because we all get into this business for the same reason. And that's because we love the games. The irony is right now, you can love the games all you want. That doesn't mean you're going to get to go to the games because right. The pandemic. So it's just finding new ways to like fall in love with your job, even though you're not doing what you got into the job to do. But yeah, as far as on-camera moments, those moments with the fans ended up being like two of the biggest highlights of my time there. People were just so happy, man. It just like I love unbridled joy. Like I love love. I love connecting people with great moments. That's what made my job so fun as like a pre and post game host is that we would be with you through your emotions of a huge walk-off win, or if you know Jonathan Papelbon comes in and blows a game that doesn't really need just to stay in the race. Or if somebody hits a game-winning shot, you know, TJ McConnell style over Carmelo Anthony, or if you see somebody hit a shot against the Sixers that ends it, like it's we to be able to get that raw reaction and to know fans were tuning in because they want to hear from the coach, they want to hear from the players, and they want to hear whoever's the analysis is coming from, whether it's Ricky Bowe or Ben Davis or you know, Danielle Marshall or Jim Lynham or Mark Jackson. I've worked with them all. Gerald Henderson. Like there's the names go on and on and on. So it's just great to be able to do that.
So speaking of Ricky Bowe and strong emotions, we were wondering if you have a favorite argument that the two of you have gotten into over the years.
So one of the most common things that both Ricky Bowe and myself get asked on it, like anytime somebody sees us, wants to talk about like the shows or whatever, it's like, you guys really hate each other, huh? I think like, there's some genuine like hate. Like Ricky Bowe is one of my favorite coworkers of all time. One of my just favorites, like, cause he's so like almost to an uncomfortable level of honest and brutally, like there's no filter on this man. And it's my job as his co-host to bring out those emotions and make sure that, you know, everybody at home gets to hear what I get to hear during the course of a game, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So my favorite thing, we used to do this show after Post Game Live. I forget what it was called, but like, it was like an extra show. It's like we did it whenever the games were on NBC Sports Philadelphia Plus. We had like a different studio and we did a game on it, everything. And what we would do is we had like these two big chairs. And I posted this a while ago on Twitter. But like it was like late at night. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, basically. And so because it was 1 o'clock in the morning, we were just talking about sports, but we're talking about everything else in between. And we were talking about the fact that the Phillies had to come back the next day and play on Sunday afternoon. And it was like going to be they needed to win this game because this is like the bad Phillies era. This is before Bryce Harper. Not that they're great right now, but hey, they can make the playoffs because, you know, new playoff format. And he said something about Sunday and he said something else about Sunday. I was like, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Because growing up, we used to see like the monster trucks, and that's what they always tell you, like on Sunday, come see the monster trucks at whatever arena or whatever, at Wells Fargo Center or a stadium or whatever. And he was like, what are you talking about? And like, it was a whole thing I had explained to him about the monster trucks, and people like got such a kick out of that. And like, just the ability for him to like go off on anything is what I love about Ricky Bo. And he just, either that or when we used to do West Coast games and we did like the pajama parties, we would just do a pajama party post game. And like the first time we didn't even ask for permission and we got in trouble. I didn't care. I was like, come on. If you're staying up to watch this show at 1:30 in the morning, it's okay if we do something different, in my opinion. I don't know what you guys think, but
I think that's awesome.
A great idea. Yeah.
I was like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have a pajama. Because if you're up at 1:30 in the morning to watch a Phillies post game show, clearly we want to make sure you don't fall asleep watching the Phillies post game show. Just try to add a little wrinkle to it. it was great the first time that we did it. And then the next time we did, they were like, well, we're okay with you guys doing it, but we want you to wear like uniform pajamas. So they got stenciled pajamas, like pajamas with like, that said, like, I think they said like CSN on them or something. I was like, this is inauthentic.
Matching DJs.
I'm all about authenticity, and that was inauthentic.
Yeah, people want to see what you're wearing at home. And
Ricky and I were always being authentic with y'all. We're never trying to like pull over your eyes or make it seem greater than it was. We're just like, yo, we just out here having a good time.
Yeah, it's so like you talk about like just all the people you've worked with, and I know like growing up, I watched Comcast Sportsnet every morning before I went to school. Every day when I got home from school, I watched you on Sports Rise every morning. And it's like, it sucks to see, like, I'm happy for you. You have a new position, but to see everyone who was just let go is like really hard. So many talented people. I mean, so many talented people have worked at that network. I mean, how tough is it for you? And are you like, maybe like a little bit annoyed with the fact that, you know, they weren't able to keep all that talent that you were able to work with in place there?
I don't think annoyed is the right word. I think I just understand what they're trying to do. You know, we live in a digital world now. I mean, I'm on a podcast right now, right? Yeah. Like, this is what it is. And the station that I worked for before I came to Philadelphia, right? Fox Sports Net Pittsburgh. We used to do like a nightly news show, not unlike Sports Night and Sports Rise. And I guess now it's Sportsnet Central. And we did that, and that was like our big thing. Like we have like the Pirates, the freaking Penguins, the Steelers, all the local teams, whether it was Pitt, Duquesne, Robert Morris. And we talk about them, and we talk about other stuff too, like bigger picture, but mostly about local sports. They got rid of that show and they went to a just pre and post game model, like pre and post game. Right. And I realized like they didn't need to have that show. People who were watching were going to watch anyway to watch the games. They're going to pay the carriage fee for the cable channel to watch the games. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter as much as people think what Comcast Sportsnet or NBC Sports Philadelphia or Fox Sportsnet Pittsburgh or AT&T Sports Pittsburgh or Root Sportsnet Pittsburgh puts on the air, you're going to watch the game. The primary way they get their money is from the carriage fee. Everything else on that, top of that, is like nice and good and all. But so if you can cut the costs of the people that you're paying and keep the games on and then just build like the pregame show, the postgame show, simulcast some radio, then it's not like, it's like you guys can complain and the people of Philadelphia can complain, but it doesn't matter. They already have your money. They already have, like, remember when the Sixers were bad? Do you guys remember the story about the guy who went on StubHub and bought a whole row of tickets and the service charge was more than the cost of the actual tickets?
Yes.
Like, that was a real thing that happened in Philadelphia during the Sam Hinkie era. But it didn't really matter because, you know, yeah, you're taking a hit on the cost of games, but the NBA's got the huge contracts with the television rights. They've got the huge, you know, the people are still buying gear. They're making money off, I believe you have a 76ers hat on right now, right? Is that what Steve's wearing, a 76? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
like,
it is.
So if you're like doing the Liberty Ballers podcast, you know, you're going to support the team. You're not going to not support the team is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So is it disappointing? Obviously it's disappointing that the amount of programming is not what it used to be, but it's just the reality. Yes. I mean, I really don't know what else to say about it. It's just like, the reason I'm not as annoyed is because I get it from a business model. Like,
right.
Okay. Like you could take bigger risk and do different things, but you could also do this. They're going the safe route right now.
It's like, what we see, like to piggyback off of what you said is like, as fans, a large section of the Sixers fans have issues with ownership, the ownership that's currently in place. But it's like, I know that what they care about is money. So like, the only way to impact them at all to make them care about it is to stop going to the games, stop watching the games, etc. But then it's like, do you let them, your dislike of them, rob you of your favorite team? It's like, it's sort of an impossible position as a fan because you want to do something to change the situation if you think that it's being run the wrong way, but you really only have so much power.
Steve, I mean, let's be honest. If you had it where a season ticket holder, you're like, I'm not renewing my season tickets because I'm mad about this. How long is the waiting list right now to get season tickets?
Exactly.
Like, they'd be like, okay, whatever. We know you'll still watch the games on TV. They're a good team. So like, they holding them accountable is like, it's not impossible, but it's near impossible. I mean, yeah. It's like you give them public money to build arenas and stadiums and everything else, and I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah.
I'm in Sacramento right now, 14 straight losing seasons. If they have a losing season next year, if they don't make the playoffs next year, it'll be the 15th straight year they've missed the playoffs. That's only happened one time in NBA history. I believe it was the San Diego Clippers at the time.
Wow.
Didn't go 15 straight years. But the thing is, how do you hold them accountable? Now, granted, they have a new general manager, Monty McNair. He's from the old Daryl Morey tree. You guys are familiar with the Daryl Morey tree being in Philadelphia. But it's like, if you get mad, what is that really going to do? Because they can just be like, okay, but we're here. You had to beg to keep us in Sacramento. Like, the Sacramento Kings were going to leave. Like, the Maloof brothers were going to sell. It wasn't going to be a local group. But they're here. So now it's just like, for better or for worse, till death do us part. Right now, no death, just in the ICU. The Kings are comatose in terms of playoff activity. They're comatose.
Talking about like painful like fan experiences and like there's nothing you can do. How do you feel if you're gonna compare them? Who's more painful right now to watch? The Sixers, who seem to just, you know, have all this momentum going and just really blew it, or the Kings, who just haven't had any hopes, but they haven't been good, like you said, and they passed on Luka, and that can't be easy. Like, which is harder? Which is worse?
I think the Kings are in a worse situation because they have less talent on their team presently, but they have a new GM. Luke Walton may be the coach. He may not be the coach. The thing about the Sixers is we don't know who's going to coach them and what moves are going to be made. And someone told me sometime there was going to be a major front office restructuring. Can you guys update me on that and tell me what's happened with the front office?
Nothing.
Yeah. Funny thing about that, it hasn't happened yet. And it honestly, I think they're leaking some rumors of people they won't be able to get to just stand there until they just, you know, they hire a coach and then.
Stand pat.
Yeah.
So to answer your question though, I bought myself some time by talking about it a little bit. I think the Kings are in a better situation in that they have more flexibility what they can do right now. They can go in a million different directions. De'Aaron Fox he's still on his rookie contract. Marvin Bagley's still on his rookie contract. Harrison Barnes, yeah. Buddy Hield, that's somebody they could trade. They have more flexibility. Like the Sixers, I'm sorry, you can't trade Embiid or Simmons. That would be...
We're against that on this podcast.
People who talk about that, I'm like, you're a casual. It's nice. It's nice talking to casual fans. It amuses me to talk to casuals. like, they need a coach. First things first, they need a head coach. So who they get, I think, will be – and it, did I see that D'Antoni is somebody they're trying to
– He's a favorite now, yeah.
I'll tell you one thing. If D'Antoni comes, Ben Simmons is going to have to start shooting, like have to. Like, that's just the way the offense is built. I'm not saying D'Antoni can't operate differently, because it's not like he had as great a three-point barrage going on when he was in Phoenix.
Right.
You know, Steve Nash run offense. But I don't think D'Antoni's a bad hire. I just think a lot of it is Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons has got to determine that he's ready to do whatever it takes. I don't even think, honestly, I wasn't sure Brett Brown should have been fired, but that's just because Ben Simmons was hurt. But I was like, I get it if they do fire him, if that makes sense. They were never beating the Celtics without Ben Simmons. Now, getting swept and all that other stuff, that's something we could talk about, you know, in more detail if you want to, but it wasn't Brett Brown's fault they lost when they lost.
Right.
You could say Brett Brown's fault they got swept, but the whole Al Horford thing, I have questions. Like,
how do we?
I was on the run it back. I was always about the run it back. And I was always also about, yo, do whatever you need to do to keep Jimmy Butler in Philadelphia. And this is probably where the three of you are going to disagree with me, but when I say whatever, I do mean whatever to keep Jimmy Butler on the team. And so if that meant Jimmy Butler over Ben Simmons, I was with that. You might think I'm crazy. You might think I'm crazy. And that's fine.
It's a real question.
Ben Simmons is an all-NBA player. He's a phenomenal player. But if Ben Simmons isn't going to shoot, like, he needs to shoot. He doesn't have to make the shots. He just has to have the threat of a shot. Like, if he's not going to do that, and maybe he will do that this coming season, I'll retract what I said. But until Ben Simmons starts shooting, they're not going to win the championship. They're not. That is, unless you surround him with all three-point shooters. If you have, like, guys on the like,
– if only we had three-point shooters.
If you had a Duncan Robinson, we could have a different kind of conversation. They don't have a Duncan Robinson. I don't know, man. Y'all got me worked up thinking about it.
A lot of people think that it was like Ben or Jimmy, you know, that sort of thing. But Emily a few weeks ago brought up that if the Sixers had a more sound infrastructure and like a better leader at head coach, a better leader in the organization at the ownership level, maybe that person, like a Pat Riley type person, what's his name? Who's with the Clippers? Jerry West type person would sit the two of them down and say, we're signing you both and we have to figure it out, you know, all together. So I think it might not have been, if things were better overall, it might not have had to be such a binary decision.
You know, when Jimmy said what he said about the fact that he didn't know who was running the show, that's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, it's like, a problem.
If your guy doesn't know who's in charge, yeah, that's failed leadership.
And they're still talking about that. Like, Josh Richardson mentioned accountability after the season.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but they fired Brett Brown, so now is the accountability going to be fixed? But we have a GM and an infrastructure, which we don't know what it is yet. Like, you guys be sure to let me know when they figure out that whole rearranging of the chairs, if you will.
Well, they didn't tell us last time.
Chairs in the room, but no new chairs. But when they figure that out, let me know. Elton Brand says he's in charge now, so I'm very highly interested in what's going to actually happen. Yeah, when Jimmy Butler said what he said about not knowing who's in charge, that, to me, told me everything I needed to know.
Just to wrap up your time at NBC in Philly, do you keep in touch with any of your colleagues there, Ricky Bowe, any of the others? Like, how often are you in touch with them?
Of course I'm in touch with them. I talked to them all. Yeah. I was talking to Ricky. Ricky tweeted at me last night about the bullpen because I was asking how many runs is it going to take to win this game, the second game of the doubleheader. As the game was the second of a doubleheader, because I'd been busy working and I've turned on the game and it was like the third or fourth inning. I thought they had to get to the ninth. Getting to the seventh, not as rich. I talked to the current host of Sixers pre and post game live all the time, Amy Fadul. We talk about all kinds of stuff, not just sports related. She's one of my dearest friends on the planet.
He is great at her job.
Mills all the time. Barrett Brooks, who does football stuff, quick slants, all that. Talk to him. And my former coworkers who I no longer work with, like Derek Gunn, as I reverently refer to him, Uncle Gunner. I talked to him because I told him, like, yo, I'm letting you know, I'm coming to get them ribs next time I'm in town. the ribs thing with Gunner is like a fairly new phenomenon, I feel like, in the last year, 2 years. Like, I've been eating Gunner's ribs for like since 12 years ago. So, like, that's nothing new. Gunner has this picture on like his flip phone because, you know, he's older, so he used to use flip phones. A picture of me, like, on his recliner in his living room, and I am knocked all the way out, suffering from the like, because I haven't been fed well. And so when I get fed well, I fall asleep, even if it's at, you know, other people's houses. So yeah, I keep in touch with all my people at NBC Sports Philadelphia that I'm close to. Like,
that's great.
My old supervisor, Michelle Murray, people would think that, you know, me not being there means like I don't talk to her, but I'm always trying to send her people who could like work there one day, you know, if they have openings. I don't know what their overall structure was. Former intern, Taryn Hatcher. I don't know if you guys know who she is.
Yeah.
She was an intern when I was there. And like, I told her, like, when I left, I was like, yo, I'm gone. You need to get this job. And look where she works now. So like,
right.
Yeah, I there's no ill will there. Love everybody there. I was just, I was just talking to T-Mac on the phone 2 weeks ago about baseball. Like, yeah, I love all the
that's
people.
That's great.
Yeah, that's good to hear. We still love everyone there too, and we still love you. So it's you know, it's nice because
I appreciate the love. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to ask you, since you're in Sacramento now, is there's been kind of some stuff floated about a swap with other stuff going on, but with Horford and Hield. And what would you think about that for both teams?
I think that would be a beneficial swap for both teams, given the personnel that they both have right now. We just talked about the Sixers needing dead-eye shooters. Buddy Hield, the dude can shoot. Like, mm-hmm. He's the 3-point champion from All-Star Weekend. Horford makes sense here because he's a veteran. I don't know about the tail end of that deal. That's the one thing I get a little shaky about. But he would have a more make sense existence as the center for Kings. Then you slide Rashawn Holmes into a backup role, and he's got all that energy off the bench. I don't know if you remember him from the process days, but he's a very good player. And then he can tandem up with either Harrison Barnes playing a smaller four, or Marvin Bagley playing the traditional four, because, you know, Horford can stretch the floor. I mean, Sixers fans know that from his time in Boston when he used to destroy them from the perimeter. So I think it would make sense. Yeah, I think if they can figure out the details, I think it definitely makes sense.
You as a sports fan, not somebody really working in sports, do you have favorite moments of being in a stadium as a fan, or most painful moment? I mean, if you're from Philadelphia like we are, our favorite moments and most painful moments, we have just as many of both. So what about you? Do you have like – memories that stick out to you?
Oh yeah, most def. Blackhawks overtime winner to end the Stanley Cup Finals at the Wells Fargo Center. I was literally right there. We were like, wait, did he just because the opposing team scored, it got eerily quiet. So that's one of them. Also, Dodger Stadium. 2008.
Yeah.
Game four. Is it game four? I'm trying to remember. Into the night, yeah. Matt Stairs. And the most underrated home run in Philly's history, which was Shane Victorino's home run that tied it just before.
Right.
So, like, people don't ever talk about Shane Victorino, but, like, yo, Shane, I remember. You're out here hitting bombs. Set upstairs to do big work. Trying to think of other stuff. Harrison Barnes corner three, when the process Sixers almost beat the Warriors on a like Saturday afternoon crazy game. I was like,
there was an illegal screen that let him be open on that. Yeah.
Was it an illegal screen?
It was an illegal screen. I'll go to my grave talking about that.
So he hits the corner three, but the Sixers were about to pull off maybe the biggest regular season upset in NBA history, because we know how bad that team was. Yeah. And we know how good the Warriors were. The Warriors won 73 games. Like,
if the Isaiah Sixers Cannon had a huge game. It was great.
So those moments jump out. In the Olympics, I covered I was in the stadium when the American women set the 4x100 world record and won the gold medal doing that.
Wow.
That's crazy. And just there's just been so many things, man. Like lot of games, lot of great games. But those are some of the ones that stick out the most to me.
So another thing you did in recent months is you were doing a lot of podcasts, Zero F's Given. So what was that like for you to express yourself more in like you as a human being and you in your personal life? Like, what was that like for you?
It was great. I think the best part about that was I was on with my friends and we got to just talk about whatever we wanted and nobody was dictating what we were doing but us. And you guys get to do that, obviously. You know, whether you're suffering from gastroenteritis or not, you get to determine what you're going to talk about each and every time you get on here. And the freedom to do that is, that's something I've really gone back and forth on the last, really since I left NBC Sports Philadelphia, was starting a podcast. Did I want to start a podcast? Well, Sean Bell, who works at Fox 29, and Don Bell, his brother, who works at CBS3, we're like, hey, we're doing this podcast. Let's do it. I was like, all right, I'll come on it. I was like, I can't promise you I'm going to be on it forever, but I would definitely do it. It was less maintenance on my part. I just show up, contribute to what the topics maybe should be, and we have fun with it. When you're doing your own podcast, there's a lot more forethought that has to go into it, a lot more promotion, marketing, all the other things. At the end of the day, and I've always said this at any job, probably since halfway of my time at NBC Sports Philadelphia, people are like, what kind of job would be ideal? I was like, I just want somebody to pay me to be me on television or on radio or on a podcast or whatever. Like, because I'm such a believer in authenticity. Like, you can tell me what we're talking about, but as long as I'm able to do that within the framework of just being myself.
Right.
And sometimes you can't do that, especially early in your career, because you got bosses who are jerks, right, who don't know any better. And people believe things have to be talked about and discussed a certain way. That's not true. And that's what I'm happy about with social media. Well, sometimes happy about. And the digital way is that the rules aren't as stringent. There are still some rules for decorum and everything else, but you know, I can go on this podcast in a freaking student runs Philly style t-shirt and nobody's gonna get mad because I was not dressed up. I've never worn a tie on the air in my entire time in Sacramento. Like, I thought about it. I was like, I'm just going to not wear a tie and see what happens. If they say, we need you to wear a tie, I'll wear a tie. But guess what? They didn't say anything. So no ties.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is definitely something that, like, that old guard of you need to be in a suit and a tie and you need to, like, read the copy and do, I feel like that is fading away as people get the opportunity to do things like this and have someone like you on, not for 5 minutes, but to talk for an hour and just see what you're like. And I think that creates a lot more interest in the stories that you're talking about. Speaking of you personally, recently you tweeted about playing basketball yourself and how you haven't played in a while. I'd like to know what current or former Sixer is your game most like and why is it Al Horford?
That's just mean, Steve.
It's definitely not Al Horford. It's probably somewhere it's Jeremy Grant-esque.
Oh, love that.
I'm annoying on defense. My shot isn't great anymore. I mean, my shot's better. Jeremy Grant's probably bad. It's probably more Iguodala, but I don't have the Iguodala athleticism. Like, I'm not out here dunking on people. But I'm a defensive specialist, and here's what I love about pickup or like rec league basketball. Defense is all about effort. Like, it starts with effort, but more so the older you get, because other people's offense gets more limited over the course of time. They don't have the athleticism. So if you just play good defense, they won't even want to shoot. They'd rather pass than deal with your annoying defense.
Right.
And my goal is to – and so I came out here – the first year I was out here, I was in a rec league, and they were like, you know, it's really – you know, there's some pretty good players, whatever, whatever. And I couldn't do it because I had to work at night. But then my schedule changed, and I wasn't working nights on, like, I think it was Wednesday nights. So I was able to sign up for this league. And I was too late, but a guy broke his hand, and they needed somebody to fill in because he was going to be out for the season because he broke his hand. So I filled in for him, and I was just like, hey, man, I'm going to play with you guys. I'm going to tell you what I do. Like, I didn't know these guys. They hadn't played with me. And we won the championship, and no one had ever gone undefeated and won the championship before, but we did that, and namely because – everybody did what they were supposed to do, and my job was just to stop the other team's best scorer, slow him down. I didn't have to necessarily stop him, just slow him down.
Yeah.
And when you did that, we had good enough players around me. So, like, Iguodala style, baby, just, like, I'm annoying you. And I'm a streaky shooter from deep anyway. My mid-range is nice, but my from deep, I don't – I'm just older, guys. I'm 42 years old. I can't do what I did at 25, you know? But I can still That's be annoying. Great.
Speaking of some former Sixers that we just talked about, especially Jeremy Grant. So you were obviously, you know, you were still in Philly for when they were really bad. And when it was sometimes, like, I think feel like we did a good job, like, as fans and everyone just kind of staying hopeful towards the future. But there were definitely games, like, especially we're talking about the 10-win season and Embiid got hurt again. Okafor was struggling at times where it felt hopeless. So how did you, like, what's your philosophy on, like, obviously you talk about, like, you want to be authentic, but do you feel the need to, like, be like kind of hype it up? Like, you know, this team could still do stuff going forward. You know, they could win tonight. Who knows? Or is it sometimes where you don't even feel the need to do that?
That's a fair question. I think keeping it night of is really the key. You never know, they could win tonight, or the Los Angeles Clippers could have a literal dunk contest at the Wells Fargo Center tonight and be up by like 25 points at halftime.
Right.
That's what could happen when you're covering the process Sixers. I think it was more about individual development, and we always try to make it about, like, okay, what did Nerlens Noel do today? How has he been playing recently? What did Jahlil Okafor do? How have they been playing recently? Because the rest of these guys are like a dime a dozen. And then if a guy is playing really well, you would be like, okay, this is a guy, could you see him in the rotation?
Right.
On a good team. We know he starts now. But, like, look around the league. There's Sixers everywhere. From Christian Wood, who was really key in my fantasy team doing very well at the end of the season. I mentioned Jeremy Grant.
Rashawn Holmes.
Yeah, Rashawn Holmes here. Point guard Jakar, as I like to call
Jakar,
him.
Jakar, killing it. Yeah.
Love Jakar. He was one of my favorites.
Justin Anderson making people mad. Yeah. they're every TJ McConnell, backup point guard in Indiana. Like, there's people everywhere doing things. So it's just a matter of making the focus about the players and the growth and understanding, yeah, this team's not going to the playoffs. I don't believe we ever misled anyone to thinking this team was a good team. It was just like,
right,
what are they gonna do tonight? Stick around and find out. Will Jahlil get 20 and 10? Will he embarrass who did he embarrass?
The Sixers?
Oh, he embarrassed there was a game where he embarrassed Towns.
Yeah, he had some good games against Towns there.
Towns. You focus on what you can focus on that's positive. Ongoing, to say the least.
So you were in Philly for a long time, and you were there through some very strange things. I would like to know which was stranger to cover for you, the Andrew Bynum saga or the Markelle Fultz saga? What was stranger for you?
That's a great question. That's like a toss up. I'm gonna go with the Bynum, just because they had this man's press conference at the Centennial Center. Like the way they tried to jump it off, that was back when Adam Aaron was in charge.
Right.
You know, with the man who owns AMC. before he was doing movies and telling you to get back inside and watch the movie. No crisis. He was trying to tell you about Sixers basketball and give you different mascots to pick from, if you get my drift.
Yes.
So I'll say him because, like, once that video came out of him, like, dancing on stage, like, he went bowling. I think the bowling thing is where I was just like, what are we doing here?
And all the hairstyles, it was really unhinged.
Do you know the story about the hairstyle? Like, so he was literally getting his hair braided, and they told me he had to talk to the media. And he was the only half
and half, right?
Yeah, he was only half done. So he, like, and this is before Twitter was at its, like, what it is now. Can you imagine that happening now? Like,
yeah,
things that were covered, especially during the process days, would get so much more just jokes. I'm here for the laughs.
Do you guys remember when Doug Collins asked the fans to pray for Andrew because he wasn't playing yet? He wasn't. Oh man. What a bad time.
Yeah, Doug Collins, the whole Doug Collins era, like, yeah, the Bynum stuff was just weird. The full stuff was weird, don't get me wrong. I'm just, Bynum never, he never played a minute for the Sixers. No. And they gave up a lot to get him. And yeah, it's not great at all.
It's like the full stuff, you can at least talk yourself into, like, there's some kind of explanation, right? Like, we're not being told the real explanation, but, like, he's hurt, right? Like, he has some kind of shoulder injury. He's probably also in his head. You know, you can pretty much reason it out, and it's, like, unusual, but it's, like, I feel confident. I know, pretty much know generally what happened. And with Bynum, it's, like, I don't think he wanted to be here at all. One thing I want to know is, what do you miss the most about being in the area?
Wow. What do I miss the most about Philadelphia?
You need to pick one thing. That you don't get in Sacramento. Like, I'm sure you still have a lot of fan interaction, but I'm talking about like something unique that you just wish you still had.
That's a great question. Probably my gym. It sounds so weird, I know, but like, so I was a member at the gym, the Sporting Club at the Bellevue. It's downtown, right next to the Hyatt on Broad Street, and like I love that gym. Like, you would have a hard press. Like, I miss that gym every day. I could go to that gym, especially when I wasn't working full-time. I would go to the gym, do work, because they had, like, a lounge you could do work, whatever, Wi-Fi, all that stuff. They had classes, like, all day. Like, I could do a yoga class. And it'd be, like, four or five different yoga classes any given day. I could do, like, an HIIT workout. And I had a trainer that was great. Like, the gym, man, I was in as good a shape as I had been in since I was probably like close to 25 years old. Right after I stopped being Fat Marshall, I'd gotten up to like 27 pounds. But when I was going to the gym, I got down to like 193, I think.
Nice.
There's a stark contrast there. I'm probably at like 198 right now. But yeah, just going to the gym, and they had a full court basketball indoors. Didn't matter if it was rain, sleet, snow. You could play some basketball in the afternoon. Yeah, the gym, man. I just miss the gym.
Did people come up to you a lot in the gym?
Yes, too, though. What'd you say?
Did people come up to you a lot in the gym? Like, was everyone always excited to see you there? Or did people leave
no.
you?
Oh, no, people were excited to see me just because, like, I was a nice guy and I was fun to hang out with. But not in a TV sense. No, okay. No. It wasn't even like that. It was cool. It was just nice to be able to go to the gym, man. Especially, like, our gyms are still closed out here. I know your gyms are open there, but our gyms are still closed. So maybe part of that is the fact that I can't go to the gym right now. Maybe that's part of why I'm in the gym. But restaurants too. There's several restaurants in Philadelphia. To me, is the most underrated restaurant city in the country. Probably one of the most in the world. Just so many good restaurants. Last time I was there, I had some food at Bud in Maryland's, which was amazing. It's like, there's just so many good places. It's great.
We just have one more before we get you out of here, and thank you in advance for all your time.
Yeah, thank you.
You were here for the city's only two championships within the last 37 years. Do you think there's something about that that brought you closer to the fans of the city?
Absolutely. What? Like, people are always like, who are your teams? And I tell them my teams, and my teams are interesting because I'm from Huntsville, Alabama, so like, it's a potpourri of teams. Like, I grew up a Bills fan because one of the offensive linemen at Alabama A&M University, which was in Huntsville where I grew up, got drafted by the Bills. So I followed the Bills and watched them go to 4 straight Super Bowls and lose every single one of them. I've always been a Bills fan, right? And then I'm a Warriors fan because Run TMC forever, first one to 100 wins. Don Nelson's my hero. University of Alabama. And I loved him pre-choking out PJ Carlissimo.
Sure.
First NBA jersey I ever owned was a Latrell Sprewell jersey.
That's a great hat.
So I'm a Pittsburgh Penguins fan because everything I learned about the NHL, I learned from playing NHL 94, and I used to use Lemieux and Jagr, and we would do work with Tom Barrasso. That was like my thing back then. And then I'm a Chicago White Sox fan because I was born in Birmingham, Alabama. I used to go to Birmingham Barons games when I was a little kid, and that's the affiliate of the Chicago White Sox. So those are all my teams. But people are like, oh, you're not a Philadelphia fan. I was like, well, I mean, I have so many friends who are Philadelphians. And I have so many people who have supported me in my time in Philadelphia. And I know when the Philadelphia teams win, it makes them extremely happy. And then more importantly, really, when the Philadelphia teams lose, people want to jump off the Ben Franklin Bridge.
That's right.
You guys ever walk through Center City on a Monday after an Eagles loss?
It's bad.
It is depressing. People are not in a good mood. They're grumpy. They're more angry than a normal Philadelphian is.
Right.
They're not friendly. So because of that, yo, Philly, take it home. Like, when they won those championships that you talked about, I didn't realize it was really – but I did the math in my head when you said it. Yeah, 37 years. I was just so happy for all the people that I love in Philadelphia. Like, how could I not be?
Yeah.
My thing with the fans that I love and that love me back, I think Philadelphia gets a horrible rap.
Yeah.
Because people like Santa Claus, batteries, Michael Irvin booed. Those like, right. There's always going to be jerk fans in any fan base. The jerk fan in the Philadelphia fan base is more amplified because everyone cares. So there's just more fans, period. The volume is higher. Like, if we made a pie, right? A pie chart. And we put like the slivers, the pieces of pie. And I was like, people who pay attention to the Eagles and the Phillies and the Sixers and the Flyers. And I changed the and to an or, right? So you care about one of those four teams. Maybe you care about all of them, two or three of them. That pie is going to be not quite a Venn diagram, but you could almost put it wholly and say that's the whole pie. Like you're in the minority if you don't care about sports in Philadelphia. So if you want to socialize, if you want to be a part of water cooler talk, not that we have that anymore since, you know, pandemic, people home, but you get the general idea of what I'm saying.
Yeah. Then
you better, even if you don't genuinely care, you better at least know what's going on with these teams.
Right.
And that's not the case in a lot of cities. I think it's a Northeast corridor thing. You know, Boston, New York, Philly, DC, to a lesser extent, D.C., but yeah, D.C. So D.C. is more of a politics town.
Yeah.
But I feel a strong connection to the city of Philadelphia and always will, whether I ever live there, work there, whatever, again. I always will, like, what? Those are my people. Like, and the my favorite thing about Philadelphians is they can sniff out the inauthenticity quicker than any other place I've ever lived. Like,
yeah.
Like, if they're telling you no, it's usually for a reason, and it's because
it's
smell right. And no one's ever come at me like that. Like, it's like if you saw somebody on Twitter, like, come at the Sixers about the process, right? I can be critical of the process. You know why? I lived it. No one won more games during a 10-win Sixers season than I did. You know how I know? Because I watched all of them.
Right. I know.
So.
Right.
I'm not speaking from a place of trolling. Well, I mean, I do troll occasionally because it's fun. It is fun, yeah. But I'm just speaking from a place of I've seen it. I witnessed it. I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, and
disagree with me, that's fine though.
Like as a Philly fan, like I think about that. Like what you're talking about with like sniffing out inauthenticity. Like if someone is always, you know, overly positive to a point where it's like it seems like they're faking it, you know, I feel like you can tell. And I'm not as interested in that. Like, I might disagree, but I want to hear what people have to say, and I want them to mean it. Like, you know, I want them to care about the teams, I want them to like them, but I also want them to like be honest. I think it's like it's what has made you and a lot of your former coworkers, like, they're very enjoyable to watch because you guys are, you're honest. You do a good job. We like to hear what you have to say.
There's no tolerance for bullshit.
I appreciate it. Yeah. No. It's a zero tolerance. And I welcome, love it. And I wish everywhere was like that. My favorite thing about the city of Philadelphia, and I've said this many times, and I'll say it beating a dead horse. You guys don't even understand what apathy is. Yeah. Like, apathy. Like, we either love you or we hate you, but we never don't care.
Yeah.
We'd rather hate you than not care about you.
Right.
And you're going to take this hate. And that's actually good for every team that you follow, because once people start showing apathy, you're done.
It's exactly.
Over. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's over.
Well, Marshall, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. It was great to have a chance to meet you and talk to you. You are on Twitter at mharrisonair. Is there anything else you'd like to promote or send people toward?
That same handle works for all social media platforms. I'm not going to make the TikTok deadline. I'm not going to be on TikTok, but I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter at that same handle, at mharrisonair. The reason I didn't join TikTok had nothing to do with like Chinese government, all that stuff. It was more of like Reels is coming. I knew this months ago. Reels is coming. Mm-hmm. I'll just wait for Reels and everybody else. It's like Snapchat. I'm on Snapchat, but like I don't use Snapchat because
right.
I came up with IG stories. Come on, guys.
You're going to make some Instagram Reels for us?
I have not made my first Reel yet. I was thinking about it yesterday. I've just been so busy, and like I want to, like if I'm going to take the time to do a Reel, I don't want it to flop.
That's right.
You know,
right.
Yeah, maybe I'll do a Reels tomorrow. Maybe.
All right, we'll
maybe
be on the lookout.
Maybe, yeah. I'll let you guys know.
All right.
Thank you, man. So good to see that you're doing well, and stay safe out there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve, Daniel, Emily. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.